Hello, I'm Dr. Douglas Rhee, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School in Boston at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary. Joining me today by Skype is Dr. Suchi Patel, Associate Professor and Director of Glaucoma Services at Loyola University in Chicago. We will be discussing the latest developments in glaucoma presented at the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery meeting for Medscape Ophthalmology. I thought it was a great ASCRS meeting. Dr. Patel?
I think this was one of the best meetings that I've been to for ASCRS.
Let's talk about some of the interesting things. The session started off with a diagnostic discussion about visual fields, OCT, and progression. What do you think the take-home messages were from the presentations by Dr. Chopra and Dr. Harasymowycz?
Yeah, it was actually really great because I never had thought about that before, but they brought up the point of how if we're going to be using these modalities, you know, both structural and functional, to monitor for progression, which is, you know, what they're used for, then we have to make sure that we are changing our baseline at appropriate times and making sure we have good baseline testing to begin with. So, you know, if we have appropriate baseline testing and then we're monitoring for progression, if we have any intervention such as surgery or even, you know, a large spike in their pressure where we've already noticed some progression, then we have to reestablish baselines after that so that we can keep using these modalities to monitor for progression. Because without that, then, you know, it may seem that the patients are progressing despite having adequate therapy because of the intervention that we've done, such as surgery.
That is a great point. They also brought up the question of what is a good baseline. Many of us do two visual fields or two scans for baseline. But do you think that you can accomplish that with a patient fairly easily when you are reestablishing a new baseline to make sure that it's not just one test? What do you do in your practice?
Sure. I actually recall somewhere hearing or from reading somewhere that they were actually recommending almost three, you know, reliable visual fields or three reproducible structural tests, which I think the structural tests are a little easier to get three reproducible tests, but to get three reliable visual fields is often very difficult in patients. So I can see how there can be definite obstacles in establishing a good baseline exam, and then maybe even more so to establish another baseline exam that would be adequate. So I try my best to get reliable fields and within a short time period, especially if I'm trying to establish a baseline. So perhaps have a patient come in, do a visual field, and then repeat it again within about 2 months or so and see if I can get reproducible results. But I'm going to admit it's pretty difficult sometimes.
I try to make it easier for my patients. I bring them back in about a month and tell them, you don't have to visit with me. You can just come in and have the test. We're just trying to get a baseline. That way, it might ease some of the burden because oftentimes the big part of their waiting is to see me, not for the test. Do you think that approach is reasonable to you?
No, that's great. Maybe just, you know, also the anxiety of seeing the doctor again and things may be making it more difficult for them to take the visual field test. So having them come to just get the baseline tests is probably a great idea.
There's a lot of discussion about some of the newer technologies and older technologies for glaucoma surgery to try to bring down the pressure. There was a spirited debate about ECP, specifically its role with cataract surgery. Do you add it to cataract surgery? We heard a great discussion from Dr. Robert Noecker and Howard Barnaby about that. What do you think about it for your practice? What makes sense about ECP and what doesn't?
Sure. So, I think that the data does show that there is a reduction in pressure, more so with the ECP added to cataract surgery than with cataract surgery alone. So I'm not sure that I could refute that there is a benefit to that. I think that the point that stuck with me and was going to be hard for me to justify doing ECP was the cost of the machine itself and how many you'd have to do to recover the cost of the ECP. So I believe, if I remember correctly, if you wanted to recover the cost of having the ECP in 1 year, you'd have to be doing about 150 procedures per year.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that is a cost that a lot of people would be able to manage or justify. But I think that in terms of pressure lowering, it definitely can have a benefit. And in select patients, it would be a great therapeutic option.
How about the other options? These technologies aren't new anymore, but what are your thoughts about trabectome, canaloplasty, deep sclerectomy? Has your opinion changed in the last year about these technologies?
Well, with more techniques coming up, it seems that the field of glaucoma really is making a lot of progression. And so some of these, what you're calling, now already older techniques may be seeming to be left behind. But I think there's definitely still a benefit to a lot of these techniques. And a lot of them have a much lower initial cost that's incurred. And so compared to, like we were just saying with ECP, it may be a more practical option to get that modest pressure reduction that we may be looking for in certain patients. So, if surgeons are comfortable with, doing canaloplasty, then that would be a great option in certain patients to have a surgical procedure that should be, without a bleb and without causing the complications that a bleb would have.
You're absolutely right to focus on cost, because as physicians, we are going to be more and more responsible as we see continual reforms in healthcare. Let's turn our attention to the newcomer on the block, a new device that has been approved between the last ASCRS and this meeting by the FDA, the iStent from Glaukos, which is to be used as a single device implanted at the time of cataract surgery. Where are you in terms of incorporating or not incorporating the iStent into your practice?
Yeah, so, it is really exciting that the iStent has been approved. And in terms of my personal use of it, I think that angle-based surgery is really going to be the wave of the future. So anything that is going to make me more comfortable with angle-based surgery, I would like to at least get familiar with. So I have done some modules and some wet labs to start doing the iStent, and look forward to incorporating it into my practice. I can say from watching those videos that you were mentioning, where people are just starting using the iStent, and from my experience in the wet lab, if you're not familiar and these are the first times you're doing these procedures, I think they will be somewhat challenging. And it's always different trying it yourself than watching some of the experts, such as yourself, even doing these and showing your videos. So I think there will be some challenges, but I look forward to trying it and seeing what the results are in my own hands. I know that the data is showing that there is some pressure reduction with the implantation of one device. But this is a great time to mention how I think you had mentioned at one of our last meetings at AGS that maybe the iStent would be better served if we implanted more than one device at the same time. And I think you had mentioned this was because of the fact that there's, segmental flow and the collector channels, we don't know exactly where they are. We don't know what the rate of flow is in the different segments. And so putting in one, we may not be able to maximize the pressure reduction because we may be just getting into an area that already has high flow to begin with, and maybe another device there isn't going to help the flow, as opposed to maybe those are the best areas to be putting them in so that we can increase the flow even further. Or maybe it's the other way around, where if we put in a device where there's low flow baseline, by putting in the device, we can increase the flow. But I think that, currently it's only approved for one, but putting in more than one may be the best solution for this.
From what you can tell, is there any clinical test at this time to know where the high flow or low flow regions are, or where there are more or fewer collecting channels? Do you have any tips for this?
Sure. I'm not aware of anything that we can do clinically, like in our patients per se. I do know that there were some studies out and it was shown at previous meetings in cadaver eyes looking at the flow and looking at the population of collector channels. And it was found that the highest amount was in the infranasal area, which is why I think that, they're advocating implanting these devices in the infranasal area, which is also an easier place to put in the device if you're going in from a temporal wound. But other than that, I'm not aware of any ways clinically, in our patients that we would be able to find the best area to implant the device looking at flow alone.
That's what I've heard too, that there are more collector channels infranasally. That's a great clinical pearl that you have highlighted in terms of implantation technique. But let me take a step back from that. In what kind of patients are you going to consider the iStent, and what in whom do you think it's appropriate? For all glaucoma patients or just at certain stages of the disease?
Sure. Well, I mean, clearly, since it's an angle-based surgery, I think it's pretty evident that it has to be in a patient that has an open angle and a good visualization of their angle. Obviously, it negates people who are chronic angle closure or narrow angles. The recommendation even from the glaucoma company is, it's for moderate glaucoma. So mild to moderate glaucoma, I think patients that need a pressure reduction of a few points or, would benefit from being off of one drop or, without the, or are at the borderline where we may need to add another agent, this may be the perfect solution for them, but is not, a great solution if patients have severe glaucoma, neovascular glaucoma, really increased pressures.
So we're thinking of using this in mild to moderate glaucoma at the time of cataract surgery in open-angle glaucoma patients. So in terms of technique, we're trying to go for the inferonasal trabecular meshwork if we can get to it. Moreover, even if you have experience with angle surgery, I've found that there's a learning curve with this procedure. We aren't able to pick it up right away just because we've done angle surgery before. We need to have patience as we're learning the technique. And especially with our first few attempts. Do you have any other implantation technique tips that you'd like to have us share with the audience?
Well, first of all, I have to say it's really reassuring to hear you say that. And that watching Dr. Radcliffe show his video of his first implantation was also really reassuring to see the difficulties or the struggles that he had, so that we kind of feel a little better when we're trying to do our first ones ourselves. So that was really nice to hear and see. And then in
Yes.
terms of my own tips, well, I yet have to do my first implantation in a patient, but from what I've heard, there's a lot of small tips in terms of the viscoelastic agents that you choose to use. Practicing beforehand with a gonio lens to be able to make sure that you can visualize the angle, you kind of understand the amount that you need to tilt the scope as well as the patient's head. And getting comfortable with using just one hand to maneuver the device, because often we're used to using both our hands when we're manipulating instruments, but here we're going to have to use one hand for the gonio lens. So I think doing those things ahead of time can help prepare you for your first case.
Dr. Patel, those are some great tips. Let me try to summarize them. Number one, at the end of cataract surgery, before you even try putting in your first eye stent, go ahead and take the recommended gonio prism and just, have the patient's head positioned, have the microscope positioned, and just try to place an instrument sort of in the angle. Not to necessarily touch the meshwork or touch any of the structures, but just to get used to the view. And try to manipulate anything. You could use a chopper or any sort of device to get in there and just go in there just so that you understand the view. And number two, when I mention angle, use a 45-degree angle for both the microscope and the tilt of the patient's head. I can also share some other pointers that I found myself and that some of the trainers from Glaukos have shared with me. And you can let me know if you think that these would be helpful. So what you want to do is approach the trabecular meshwork at about a 15-degree angle with the device. And then just sort of, as soon as you start to slide it into the trabecular meshwork, flatten out, usually at about the first ridge, flatten out and just sort of wiggle and pull towards you just a little bit. And that's in recognition of the fact that the Schlemm's canal is an arc. It's not a straight line. If you try to proceed as though it's a straight line, you're going to hit the back wall and get stuck. But if you pull a little bit towards you and slide it along, I think you'll find a much easier pathway to try to get the device in. Furthermore, once you release the device, it's usually not 100% in. Just go ahead and use the device, the inserter itself, the end of it, to go ahead and tap it in the rest of the way. After that, go ahead and strum it up and down just to make sure, like you're strumming a string of a banjo, just to make sure that it stays within the tissue and doesn't move. It should just have a little bit of wiggle, but that's it. It shouldn't displace it at all. That's how you know it's fully seated. What do you think of those tips?
No, those are great tips, and I've heard the trainers and in wet lab these all mentioned, but it's great to hear it again. So I'm sure as I do my first case, I will hear your voice reminding me of these tips again.
Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share about the meeting?
Well, once again, I thought it was a great meeting. There were, you know, a lot of surgical videos and a lot of tips during this whole glaucoma day that I think were really applicable to both glaucoma specialists and comprehensive ophthalmologists in general, which I think made this a really unique and special meeting.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Patel. We appreciate you sharing your insights. This is Dr. Suchi Patel of Loyola University and Dr. Douglas Rhee of Harvard for Medscape Ophthalmology.
Thank you.